Now, I have to warn you, some of this footage that you're about to see is clearly inappropriate for young viewers. Please ask your children to leave the room. And I'm serious. You really don't want your kids watching this.
Here we go. God, I'm the day, I'm on the spot. Here we go. It's the living sacrifice. Here we go. I get your bullshit way. Here we go. I get your false pretend. Here we go. I'm the day, I'm on the hour. Here we go. Take the back of power. Here we go. I'd rather die on my feet. Here we go. Than keep living on my knees.
All right, everybody, it's Friday night. It's time for the Rogue Show. You guys know how we do it. Big shout-out to all our great sponsors that always step up. Clock Tower Pub, MMA Madhouse, Jax Media, Revolver MMA, Go Fight Live TV. Ink Tank Tattoo, Vision Smoke Shop. Everybody who helps us get happy, jolly, and enjoys MMA. So far, the lines are filling up. Shit, they're filling up quick. We've got Lapaki, my partner in crime, on my Wednesday show, and the president now of MMATopics.net. He's with us. We've also got the owner of Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. Jeff is with us. Let's see who this is. 424, who do we got?
Hey, this is Sean Loeffler.
Hey, brother. Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How you doing?
Shit, I can't complain. It's Friday night. We're kicking off an episode of the Rogue Show again. We got a full house already. Obviously, there's people out there who know who you are. I introduced everybody else, so why don't you tell everybody who you are?
It's Sean the Destroyer Loeffler. I'm a black belt under Higgin Machado and Bob Bass. I was an alternate on 2000 Olympic boxing team. I've 26-5 in professional MMA, fought, you know, the King of the Cage champion, fought in Bellator, UFC. I've got one more fight coming up August 23rd at Siquan Casino versus the Native American world champion from up north. And then we've been in really good communication with Joe Silva since I've had my ankle injury in the UFC in 2012. And so looks like we're going to do a three-year anniversary, hopefully, if all the cards play out right, in February, be back in the big show working with Zuffa and the powers that be that are a pleasure to work with in the biggest stage, you know, on the in the world for mixed martial arts.
Damn. Sounds like you got a lot on the plate.
So got some stuff, you know, owning my gym, the compound, and we've got like 60 fighters. Some people fighting September 26th in the X1 in Hawaii. So that's going to be really hard on me to have to go corner people in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. That's a rough job.
That's got to be the roughest part. I have to go to Hawaii.
Right.
Well,
I'll fill in for you. I'll bite the bullet. I'll fill in for you on this trip so you don't have to, you know, make that sacrifice.
Yeah, it's funny. All my amateur fighters are like, you know, I can't get them to fucking go down to, you know, the shows in Mexico or the local shows or the shows on Indian reservations, but they all volunteered to hold that bucket for fucking Hawaii.
Hey, you know, speaking to you tonight, I knew you were going to come on. Beatdown kind of gave me a heads up, our good friends over at MMA Beatdown. I started doing some research. What's this about? You got busted for cocaine in Lakewood? Is that what it's called? Westlake? Can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah, a cocaine arrest in Westlake?
So for Christmas, my best friend, he's my fight manager. He's got a bunch of people in the UFC, and I was going out to see him for Christmas. So like the day before Christmas, he called. This is such a fucked story. So he calls me and he goes, "Hey, I want you to come up and visit me. I'll take you to your favorite restaurant, Claim Jumpers. You can get ribs and we'll go to a movie." So I pull up to the Claim Jumper. We have a great dinner. We have a couple cocktails, and he's got a handicap pass, my best friend, in his car. And he goes, "Hey, park in this handicap spot right in front of the theater, and we'll go right in." Right as I pull the handicap spot, two cop cars, a Hummer with fucking lights, pull up to me. I'm on crutches still from the fucking surgeries after my UFC injury. They pull me out of the car, and they're like, sit on the curb. I'm like, oh, fuck, all right, I'm going to a movie. I'm stuttering. I'm scared shitless. My dad was a cop for 38 years, LAPD. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? The cop looks at me, and there's people videoing their fucking camera phones now saying, that guy's in the UFC. I'm like, what's going on? And they go, do you know who this guy is you're with? And I'm like, yeah, it's my best friend, Larry Oberle. He's my fight manager, and he owns a like million-dollar company and stuff. And they're like, oh, he goes by Larry to you? And I'm like, yeah, like, how long you know him? I'm like, 10 years? And they start laughing, like, well, we've known him a lot longer, and he's wanted. And I go, what? And I'm looking at him, and I go, what the fuck is going on? And he goes, should I run? And I'm on fucking crutches. And I go, no, don't run. I'm on crutches. What are you talking about? And so the cops are sitting there, and then he goes, is everything in the car yours? And I go, yeah. And they open my trunk, and there's a duffel bag with my Christmas present from Larry. And so they pull out two Ziploc bags full of white powder. And they go, so this is admitting that this is your car? I'm like, yeah, it's my car. I'm like, what's this? I look at Larry. I go, what the fuck is this? I go, what the fuck are you doing? And he goes, dude, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And I go, you're sorry? And I start, like, fucking crying. I got, like, tears in my eyes. I'm like, I'm in the fucking UFC. Oh, my, I own a gym. I've got daughters. You got to be fucking kidding me. And then the cop's like, yeah, you're fucked. And I'm like, oh, my God. And so then the cop goes, well, there's a present in the back seat. Do you want to see what you got for Christmas before you go to prison forever? And I go, fuck. And they open the box, the present they had unwrapped, and it said, you just got punked. Merry Christmas, faggot. And I go, ah. and the cops start laughing, and they're all friends with Larry, slapping high fives. I'm wiping fucking tears away from my eyes. And I'm like, this is the worst Christmas present I've ever been given. And he's like, but the video's amazing. And so, yeah, I got pulled over in Westlake for what I thought was 2 kilos of fucking cocaine in the back of my car. He's thinking he's going to run away. And I was literally like, my heart was beating through the whole movie. I didn't even pay one attention. I'm just glaring at him the whole time. He's like, don't be mad. You're my best friend. And I was like, Jesus Christ, good one. You got me. So for his birthday, I got a fucking rubber dildo, and I got his picture, and I carved out the tip of the penis. I put his picture on there, and I dressed it up in a Barbie karate outfit, and I put Larry the Dickhead and sent him that so he could put that on his mantle for his sons to see.
Dude, you got to admit, man, Larry, what a prank. I got to say, that's a classic all-time prank.
Oh, dude, and with the cops, I mean, these were all, like, buff SWAT guys, and they're pointing guns at me. I've got flashlights on me. And the worst part, there's just a group of people, like, taking video phones outside this rich neighborhood. Everywhere at the theater, kids are whispering. Oh, he had kids. Literally, he had hired kids to come, like, skateboarders and random kids to take video and say, that guy's in the U.S. And I'm just like, you got it. I'm just watching my career flash in front of my eyes, my dad just disowning me. It was pretty bad.
Oh, man. I love that. That is classic. Yeah, he gave me a small heads up about it, so we wanted to find out from your side.
yeah, fuck him.
I mean, can you really ever get somebody back enough for something like that? Like, you really kind of have an open door to just punk him all the time for the rest of your life.
I've got an idea that's right up there with that, but I can't give any of the details away because I don't want him to be tipped off to it. I know he's probably listening. So I've got something that we'll call back in when I get the retribution for the video that it's going to be good. I'll tell you guys off there, and you guys are going to die laughing.
Sean, you need to go to YouTube and search for the Viral Brothers. It's these two European guys, and they prank each other back and forth, and just watch and enjoy those videos, man. These guys do some hardcore stuff. Like, I'll just tell you one of them. One of them is where this guy arranges for this dude to be, like, standing on the side of the road, like, in the middle of nowhere, so he's trying to hitchhike. So these guys are driving by, and the one guy riding shotgun, he, like, convinces his buddy to pull over and pick this guy up. Well, the dude's got a fake pistol. He's got a fake pistol with him. So as they start driving down the road, the guy all of a sudden, like, acts like he's carjacking him and, like, puts the gun up to the one guy's head, makes him pull over into this field. It's, like, the middle of winter, so there's, like, a little bit of snow on the ground. Makes these guys get out of the car and has the driver strip down to his socks. Like, makes him take off all his clothes at gunpoint and, like,
he's just going after this guy, and then all of a sudden he looks at the other guy and he, like, tells him, get in the car, we're out of here, and then they go jump in the car and drive off and leave the dude there.
That's so epic.
Then the other guy, so the guy that got pranked, his, like, response was, his buddy's going to go up for a flight, like, rents this airplane to go on, like, a little tour of wherever they live at. Well, the one guy pays the pilot to put Alka-Seltzer tab in his mouth. And, like, at this point, like, in the middle of the flight, he puts the Alka-Seltzer in his mouth and it starts to foam up. And then he acts like he passes out. And the dude is just freaking out, like, shaking this guy. He's like, hey, 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 are you okay? Are you okay? What's going on? And he's just freaking out, doesn't know what is going on. And all of a sudden, the guy kind of, like, snaps out of it and acts like nothing happened. And they keep flying. And the dude was just freaking out, dude. They are awesome. It's Vital Brothers. And dude, you will be rolling on the ground.
Those might be the dudes. I saw two guys go to a buddy's house when he was out of town, and they concreted and blocked up every window and door to his house. It was,
oh, my God. No, I don't think that's you guys.
Oh, dude, I saw one like that. And they concreted and with cinder block all the windows and doors to the house, and the guy came over and couldn't get in his house.
Yeah, one of my buddies that trained with me a couple years back, we played a pretty good fucking prank on him. We had put him, we were at a bar and we got him really fucking wasted. He was a Marine, but he was also, he was an active duty Marine, but he was also a professional, MMA fighter. And he was,
man, I'm coming back from Branson.
So we put this guy wasted, right? We put him in a van with this chick, this super hot chick who's in the front seat. And we just said, hey, just, we'll come after, you know, when we're done at the bar, we'll come get you. We had a whole camera crew fake, like they were the cheaters camera crew. So they opened the door and they're like, what are you guys doing here? He's like, I'm not fucking doing anything. He starts running away, they're grabbing him. They're like, your wife's going to find out. And we had his wife there that was like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, I've never seen this bitch in my life. And we're fucking sitting across the parking lot crying, laughing in the car as this whole camera crew and his wife are acting like he's on an episode of Cheaters when he had no idea, just woke up drunk in a car with a chick.
Dude, that is awesome.
that was a pretty good laugh.
Dude, it's funny if it doesn't happen to you. As somebody who had that happen to him, I didn't think it was so funny. I'm
yeah,
just telling
well,
you.
Yeah, you were really on Cheaters?
Well, dude, like, this is years and years ago. I got right when I first got with my wife, and I was working still in the tattoo business, man, and, you know, a lot of stuff comes through the door that's pretty, you know, given to you, so sometimes it's hard to say no. Well, there was this black van with tinted out windows used to sit in the parking lot for like 4 days straight, and on the fifth day, my wife, who's now my wife, she caught me with another woman. So, you know, I swear, dude, like, she had started to go with Cheaters, because we were all, we'd be sitting in the tattoo shop, and like, one of the guys would walk out to the van and he'd just drive off and then park on another park of the parking lot and then sit there. So we don't know if it was for me or for one of the other guys, but and I got busted just a couple days later, so it was just odd.
You know what? That's a good way to probably keep guys from not cheating is just hire like a rent-a-car to sit across from his work like 5 days in a row, and then like husbands will be coming home and they're like, listen, I'll admit everything if you don't put me on that fucking TV show.
No doubt. Oh, well, I'll tell you what, you're definitely fitting in with this crew tonight. You know, basically how this show goes, since this is your first time ever on it, we got guys from the industry, fighters, managers, any fans who all call in, and we all talk MMA. I know that you've got, obviously, a fight you mentioned coming up, and you keep talking about the UFC, so I'd like to take a couple minutes and actually talk to you a little bit before we kind of get into all kinds of MMA talk, because you're on here. You might as well, you know, promote this. Like you said, you're going to be fighting coming up in a couple weeks. How's your camp so far? Pretty tight?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I'm a straight shooter when it comes to mixed martial arts and things in the sport and whatnot. I've never like been a liar or gone about what things are. And before, 10 years ago, as you guys know, without getting too much details,
fighting was a lot different when it came to supplementation, when it came to testing, when it came to commissions and stuff like that. So now, especially with like guys like, you know, what was it, Kevin Casey and Drysdale just getting in trouble. So you got to do everything clean. You can't even be taking aspirin in locker rooms and stuff like that, even over-the-counter performance enhancers and stuff that, you know, the athletic commissions aren't into. So being that I'm coming off an injury in the UFC for 3 years and 8 ankle surgeries, it really has been – it's been amazing training camp, but I've really also had to do every single thing perfect when it comes to cardio, weightlifting, everything, because you can't even be taking, you know, no explode, even like pre-workouts and stuff when they don't allow that stuff, which I think is great because it's even leveling the playing field for the cheaters and getting them out of the sport and exposed. But at the same time, even regular supplements – you help your body recover and stuff like that. So when you're getting older and I've got daughters and my business that I own, the compound, the gym, and then all the fighters I manage, it's a lot on my plate, but at the same time, my training camps are going perfectly because I have to do everything perfectly. I have to do all the weight cuts and whatnot perfectly. And my last fight, I went to Catalina. We camped for 5 days up in the 2,000-foot altitude, which isn't a ton of altitude, but we were able to, like, swim, run up hills, do lots of mountain sprints, bring some punching bags. This training camp, right before my fight, I'm going to the Sky Gym, which is one of the highest altitude gyms in the world in Big Bear. So I'm going to spend 5 days there before I come back down to the Saquon Casino and fight on the show. So the training camp's going really good. I've been going from South Bay Jiu-Jitsu with Keegan Machado and Bob Bass at the compound with my guys, down in San Diego with Charlie Kohler and San Diego Fight Club, and then Manny, you know, El Manelo at San Diego Fight Club with, like, some UFC guys, Will Watson, Luke Carlucci's over there. So we're bouncing around me with just different places, but then the last push will be it being Big Bear at that Sky Gym with the altitude.
Now, you've sat back and obviously had to heal and watch everything play out in the UFC. How do you see the competition today versus 3 years ago?
I mean, I think that I'm a middleweight, and I think the middleweight division, and this isn't disrespect towards any UFC fighter or, you know, a former Strikeforce fighter, prior IFL, but that being said, I think the most open, winnable division in the UFC right now is the middleweight division. The lighter weight divisions, there's a bunch of beasts. 170 is fucking retarded. It's got like 25 fucking guys that are monsters that I think could win a title. 205 has got a lot more guys building, and I'm not a heavyweight, so that, you know, doesn't matter. But heavyweight even has some of these guys now. They're considering super heavyweight even because there's so many big guys. So middleweight has been kind of jumbled around. A lot of guys have cut down and been, you know, like the Lombards going to 170s or a couple of years ago, you know, Nate Marquardt and some of the more relevant fighters have been dropping down. You know, even Calif Leydin and Damian Maia have dabbled at the welterweight division. So it really opened up right after I got hurt. In fact, to answer your question, it was kind of a fucking kick in the balls because when I got hurt, my opponent was Buddy Roberts. All respect in the world to my opponent. And, I mean, like anybody, you feel you would have beat the guy if the fight happened. If you don't, you probably shouldn't be in the sport. But then Buddy went on to fight a 5-0 Chow Magahalis, who now has won like 4 in a row. But he beat Chow because there's that first fight jitters in the UFC and whatnot. And I feel like that could have been my win as well. And then he got thrown in last minute to fight Yushin Okami, Buddy Roberts did, who was number 4 in the world then. So that was a little bit hard for me to watch. I got a little emotional because I figure if I don't get hurt and beat Buddy, they give me the Chow fight, which was his next fight, and I win that fight. Then I'm fighting the number 4 guy in the world, and fuck, it's a flip of the coin. You're in the top, you know, 5 fighters if you get that last-minute call. So it really was a little disheartening, and I was kind of over it, like, fuck fighting. I'm just going to coach and manage. And then I started watching, like, Chris Weidman knocks out Anderson. Anderson breaks his leg. All this other crazy shit happens in the middleweight division, so I really feel that it's kind of open now to where I don't know. I think I could fuck some people up and make a name for myself in that division.
Well, real quick, I want to – we had H.R. Baker. He just left weigh-ins in the Midwest, but I don't know where he went. But I do have Ray Lopez from Takedown Grappler on with us now as well. Ray, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, thank you. How's everybody doing tonight?
We're doing better than you. You sound rough.
You got to excuse my voice. I left it at Tachi last night.
Yeah, that was a crazy fight. Carrying and Larry Joe Soto.
I managed him. And it was a good fight. You know, there's a lot of politics going on behind the scenes. You know, we got fucked over on the weigh-ins. But, you know, it's all right. Terry Gunn doesn't need the Tachi belt. He's a people's champion.
Who's that?
Terry
Gunn. Oh, Flash, yeah. Terry's a good kid, man. All those guys at Systems Training Center and you know, those guys are good kids. I've known a lot of them for a while because I grew up in L.A. So I heard it was a great fight.
It was an awesome fight.
He did great. Hey, Ray, you know, I got to say, real quick, I got to say, he did great with his defense. I felt that he was super active off the bottom, especially going for subs and strikes. If the fight would have ended right before the choke, I would have given it to him on the cards 29-28.
Well, you know, the thing is that he couldn't defend the takedown. He was on rubber leg strength because, you know, trying to make that weight cut when their scale was off. And, you know, I'm not making excuses. Joe Soto is a beast. This kid, I mean, he's the complete package. And even Joe, after the fight, I was talking to Joe. He's like, man, this kid belongs in the UFC. He's a badass. You know, I took that as a very big compliment coming from Joe Soto.
A Bellator champion, yeah.
Exactly.
Dude, he beat him standing up, though. I wish he could have kept that third round when he got taken down.
Oh.
Like, he was picking him apart standing up.
Dude, after that first rear naked that he got out of, he started fucking peppering him. He was putting hands on it. I was like, oh shit, he might finish this at the end of the round.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, I was scared when he got into that first rear naked. You know, especially from the angle where I was sitting. You know, I couldn't see if he had it in deep or not. So I was a little scared. But then when he broke free and you know he was out there, you know, bobbing and weaving, I was like, Joe don't want none of this. And we started tagging him. You know, he definitely didn't want to stand and bang.
Well, I can say something about Terrian, and I'm not going to mention names because I know this person wouldn't want me to mention their name, but it's a pretty big compliment. I know a promoter that's a very, very legit promoter, like very legit promoter, and he, and if you know who it is, don't mention his name, but he was offering to invest in Terrian Ware after Terrian fought in his show. That's how confident he was that this kid was the next big thing. He was like, hey, I'll invest in his career. And I was like, fuck me. You got promoters fucking offering to invest in you after you fight for him. That's saying something.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, it also comes to, it comes iron sharp as iron, like you said. The guy's a system. You know, your buddy John Robles, you guys have known each other forever. John is the captain of the team. And, you know, he's got those guys in line. And, you know, John's a great cornerman. He's a great training partner. He's a great fighter himself. You know, I'm waiting for John to really blow up big on the team.
Yeah, I've been super, super proud. I got John to 5-0, and I brought him up a little bit against, you know, some opponents that I knew he'd build confidence because I knew he had talent, and confidence is so big. And I went to high school with the guy, middle school with the guy. We've lived together. I fucking love John. And I it was so funny that you say that because literally I think it was like 4 days ago, we talked for 2 hours, and I was just letting him know, man, I'm so proud of everything you're accomplished. But I'm not even proud of your fighting. I don't give a fuck about you being 7-3 or fighting for belts. I don't care about that. I'm proud of the mentor and the coach and teammate that you've become. And he goes, dude, that's because I watched you. And you were always more into coaching and being a manager coach than fighting. And I said, well, that's what gives you longevity in the industry. And so many guys don't pay attention to that. And he gets it. And he's a great captain. And I don't pat myself on the back at all, but because it's all his doing. But I was really proud that he's really transformed himself into a team leader. And there's a lot of guys in MMA that have a dick measuring contest with their team members. He's not like that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, John is a great guy, especially back in the locker room. You know, he's always, you know, everybody's getting all serious and, you know, he'll crack a joke and, you know, lighten the mood. You know, he keeps everybody at ease and, you know, also on point, too.
Yeah, all the, like I said, those system guys got it going on. If I still lived in that area, I'd be there all the time hanging out with those guys and their coaching. Ian is a fucking stand-up comedian, which how much more relaxed can you get than you have a guy with stand-up comedy specials on, you know, Comedy Central on TV making you relax in the locker room?
Oh, exactly.
Well, you know, Ray, you still have a lot more on your plate, man, over the next, you know, couple weeks, dude, plus, you know, everything you're still working on for the future. On that card, did you get a chance to see any of the other fights? Was there anything else that anybody that jumped out to you?
Well, you know, IE Bad Boy, you know, Ricky Legere, you know, he did a great job. You know, he was up there in with our contingency. You know, he was with Coach Rod McKeever from Team Victory. So, you know, we were rooting for him. You know, he walked away with the belt. I mean, every fight on that card was a good fight. You know,
I got to tell you, I was shocked. And I've met Ricky a few times at, you know, King of the Cage or Gladiator Challenge or different shows that we've run in and high-fived and whatnot, or when he was working at the UFC gym. I actually, and like I said, I have respect for every fighter. I thought Nate Longren, I mean, he trains Dave Terrell in the NorCal Fight Alliance, and he was successful in the UFC, and he hasn't fought in a while, only has one loss. I was like, man, this guy's got thick triangles, thick arm bars. Rick has really got to work. And then he fucking, you know, transitions out and taps the guy. I was super impressed.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, his whole game has changed. You know, I remember when the first time I found fighting King in a cage about 4 years ago, when I think it was about 4 years ago, when he lost to Bobby Green, you know, the belt, he didn't look too impressive. But the last two times I've seen a fight for this last night and for Singh's promotion, Flawless. You know, yeah, he was on point. I mean, the kid is he's going to go somewhere. You know. Hopefully, you know, they don't think he's a little too old, and you know, he gets called up again to the big show.
Yeah, I mean, Rick. I think he's definitely going to get a shot. I mean, will it be the UFC for him? Hopefully, but either Bellator, World Series of Fighting, or UFC, somebody's going to pick him up. He's marketable. He's a good-looking guy. He knows how to fight. He knows how to sell tickets. He gets the whole marketing thing, so I really think Ricky's got a high upside. And then I didn't see any of the fights. I was reading about him because I was, you know, running classes and I was doing my own thing at my gym. And actually, I went to the Charger game, to tell you the truth, so I wasn't even fucking running classes. That's a lie. I was at the Charger game. But I saw also that Angel, but the Angel DeAnda, I don't know a lot about him, but Matt Wagler was a tough guy, even though he took it on 2 days' notice. And that Angel guy looks pretty good, too, at like 185 or 205 or whatever he fights at. I looked at his record, and I was like, fuck, this guy's beat some really good people.
And he came in there with solid hands.
He just went the distance with Tyrone Spong, too. He just went the distance with Tyrone Spong at World Series of Fighting. I mean, he's a tough, tough son of a gun.
Right? I mean, like, it kind of came out of nowhere. And, like, you kind of look at the guy, at least for the Sure Dog and pictures like that. You're like, he looks like, you know, a pretty tough Mexican dude that can throw down. And then you watch him fight, you're like, fuck, this guy's a beast. So that was pretty impressive. And Matt Wagler is much better than his record attests to. He takes fights on 2 days' notice all the time. He doesn't train at my gym or anything, but I know him. And that guy's not a walkthrough. And Angel kind of walked through him.
Yeah, I was surprised to see the outcome. I thought that fight was going to go the distance, looking at
it
on paper.
I did too, absolutely.
What did you think about Sandoval and Hollis? Or did you get to watch that one?
No, I didn't get to watch that one. You know, as a manager, you know, I have many different hats I wear, and one of those is a babysitter. So, you know, I had to watch Little Flash in the room while, you know, all the women were getting ready. And so, you know, me and Little Flash were hanging out, you know, while the fights were going on. You know, we made it back up there on time to see Rick's fight and then Terry on fight.
So,
did you watch that fight?
So, now I got a question about Terry on, because you got the inside track. He, I know, was also scheduled to fight October in the Bama show, the Brett Roberts show, the Bama USA, which is another great, great show. I don't know if Tachi's considered Southern California, but if it's not, Bama's definitely the best show in Southern California for what it's worth. And I think Terrion's fighting in October in that show, along with, like, Misha Nasiri, one of my girl fighters that fought on the last one, and some other people. So is Terrion still scheduled to fight in October at Commerce?
Yes, he is. We're already gearing up for that. We're getting back in the gym on Monday. His opponent, I forgot the dumb fuck's name, but he's already talking shit. Oh, make sure you make weight. And I'm like, oh, you know, make sure you're in for the fight of your life, fool.
Yeah, dude, guys that say something like that, you know, like he's just stacking the chips against himself. Because now, if you don't do fucking something phenomenal, people are gonna be like, you talked a lot of shit and didn't do much. So I think that favors Terrion, because Terrion's not a shit talker. He's just a workhorse.
Yeah, he's got me to talk to shit. He just backs it up.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be a good fight. You know, Brett Roberts, he's invested a lot in Terrion, you know, being his champion, and you know, he's Nobody knows what it should be. To me and Brett, it's a love-hate relationship. You know,
she's going to
talk shit to each other. And, you know, but, you know, also, too, we respect each other. And, you know, he's done a lot to further Tarion's career. So, you know, we're glad to be back, you know, October 10th with Bama defending the belt. And, you know, I just feel sorry for this dude. Tarion's going to take out all this frustration on him.
Yeah, I mean, no, go ahead.
Was there ever an opportunity for maybe Tarion and Henry Cejudo to get it on?
You know what? We'll fight anybody, anywhere.
Dude, I'll jump into that question. Henry Cejudo's canceled all of his fights when he got to the UFC, so he's got a genius manager. He was able to schedule big fights against good-name guys, cancel them, and get to the UFC. I want to fucking chime with that guy.
And not just cancel them, like, no-show weigh-in, not make weight, pull from the fight. Like, I mean, this is the best of all worlds. I can understand that.
His first pro fight, I had some guys on the card, and I know he won the Olympic gold medal, like, all fucking respect. I'm not hating on him at all. But he was the only guy on the poster for his pro debut, and I'm like, this fucking guy got the best manager in the world. He gets on every poster. He doesn't even have to show up to fucking fight, and then he gets a Zupa contract.
That's horrible. Oh, shit. Hey, so everybody knows the one and only, the man himself, Beatdown from MMA Beatdowns, joined us.
I mean, for me, Cejudo is one of the most frustrating guys because I think if he took it serious, he could be really good, but I just don't see that in him right now, and I don't understand. It doesn't make sense.
I agree. I think the other thing is Tarion is for his next opponent, man, you do not want to talk shit to a guy that just faced adversity behind the scenes with the fight promotion and lost the fight for his next comeback fight. The guy's just going to be fucking head to the grindstone. And yeah, I don't know why somebody would, you know, awake the sleeping giant, as you say, we could say.
You know, Tarion's such a beast. You know, he just fought a 2.5-round war. I mean, let's call it what it was. That's what it was. And he's going back in the gym on Monday. I told him to take a week off. He's like, nah, fuck that. It's time for us to get back on track, and we're going to beat this fool, and we're going to punish him, and we're going to prove a point to everybody.
Yeah, no, I can't wait.
Well, you know, and anybody who watched the fight, you got to say, man, he, you know, I'll be straight up. When he stopped that second takedown off of working the jabs, I was so like, yes, you know, he's got it. He knows what he's reading them. And he got taken down. He stops that one little aspect. He wins that fight easily.
Well, you know, check this out. Okay, I took a little bit of heat. You know, my company's called Takedown. And Terry, I was like, yeah, you know, you figure Takedown, you'd have more wrestlers to help me work on my wrestling.
The other thing is that I don't think we're given enough credit, and I know you'll agree, is, I mean, Joe Soto is a fucking Bellator champion. That guy deserves to be in the UFC as well. I mean, the guy's a fucking monster. So, like, it's like saying, yeah, Tarion was doing well, but it's almost like one of those neither here nor there, because both of them have such an upside, and Joe Soto is such a beast, and he's been proven. So and Tarion hasn't been fighting for that long. And whatnot. The other thing I'm actually really excited for MMA-wise that I can't wait is Gina and Ronda, if that goes down, and then the Nick Diaz-Anderson Silva, that's going to be the first fight that I buy a ticket to the UFC and actually take my dad to Vegas. I can't fucking wait. So that's going to be the first UFC that I ever buy a ticket.
Oh, now, hold on. Everybody on this show knows where I'm about to go. Look. dude, this is, to me, a slap in the face. How do you not have her face Cyborg first and give Gina, like, Alexis or somebody else to test the waters? I mean, give her Holly Holmes. Make them face you. Dude, this one's been on the show for 5 years.
Jessica Rakosi needs to fight Holly Holmes. That's the fight you make for Holly Holmes.
Well,
Jessica Rakosi versus Holly Holmes.
How can anybody out there truly think that Gina Carano, after losing to Cyborg, comes back and beats Ronda. This is nothing but put ass in the seats, just like this whole bullshit with John Jones and Daniel Cormier. And I know
I think those two motherfuckers really hate each other.
You take that motherfucking title from him, you fine both guys $100,000 just to spend them both for a
Why?
Year to hold a four-man tournament. Anybody else pulled that shit. World Series of Fighting did that. Bama did that. MFC did that. Every media outlet would be calling them a joke.
That's bullshit.
No, but dude, if you think about it, the UFC is still an entertainment industry, dude. And Holly Holm, if they can build Holly's name and rebuild Cyborg's name, that's two really legit opponents for Ronda in the future. Gina's already got a big name and whatnot, so they can make some money, put some fighters on the undercard, get rid of Gina after that. It's two hot chicks fighting. And then she's got two real opponents that they have time for to build on the undercard and just make money. So I agree with the mentality. But at the same time, you got to remember, it's still the entertainment industry.
Yeah, but there is no way that Cyborg needs any – I mean, there's just put the contract out there. Let them do it. I mean, I understand the ticket sales. But she's been clean for how many years now? She's – proven herself in the stand-up world in Muay Thai as well as in MMA. She deserves the next shot, period.
Absolutely. But as we all know, the person that deserves a title shot doesn't always get the shot. It's just the way it works.
Daniel Cormier's got a title shot. Daniel Cormier's got a title shot.
Chael Sonnen got fucking three in a row.
Hell yeah. You know what was funny? So did anybody watch the press conference of the day with Jones and Poirier and Cormier and McGregor all up on the stage?
No.
Well,
was it amazing?
There was a point where Conor McGregor was making fun of where Dustin Poirier was from, and it really kind of pissed me off because, and this is part of my beef with Daniel Cormier, because we're all three from the same hometown, Lafayette, Louisiana. And McGregor's little punk Irish ass was sitting there talking all this shit, saying Dustin's from this hillbilly town. And Cormier could have chimed in and said something, but his little punk ass chose not to. So I hope that John Jones devastates him.
This is bringing me alive.
Yeah, I mean, but that's Conor's shtick. And the UFC, you know the fucking, I mean, I'm not going to say, but you know the UFC loves that.
Oh,
and he's
great. I mean, I think the whole thing is great. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's like everybody sits here and says, oh, treat our sport better. Dude, since when did fighting become a sport? A fight is a fight. This ain't a sport. This shit's life or death.
Yeah, a fight's a fight in a cage between two contracted fighters, not on a goddamn stage at a presser.
Dude, if I'm sitting here and I know that you and me are going to fight, and then you put your
if
hands
me and
on my throat,
did
you
that,
better
we would
be
go
ready
to jail.
You better be ready to get punched, dude. You better be ready to get punched. If you put your hands on my throat like that, you better be ready to throw down.
Well,
oh,
hey,
yeah.
Mike, welcome to the Rogue Show, brother.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Mike, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody? Or don't. Okay.
Or don't. Dude, but the thing is that you got to remember about, we still have to remember, Dana White has publicly said he follows the model of WWE's Vince McMahon for promotional reasons. So I'm not saying I agree or disagree with it. What I'm saying, Vince McMahon has made a fuck ton of money, and Dana White publicly says, I'm following that. So if it's about, you know, two guys getting into my foot and that's what he wants, fighters are going to do what they're not solely influenced, but what they're encouraged to make things entertaining. So we've got to look at that side, too. I mean, you make money. Grudge matches make money, and grudge matches make rubber matches.
Now, what do we do if next week at fucking, you know, Brawl at the Beach 16 down in Shreveport, the main event starts throwing down at the fucking presser, you know? Is that going to be all right, too, because it happened in the UFC? If
cool.
It starts happening all over, people are going to fucking be turned off to the sport.
Yeah,
okay,
I agree.
Hold on. Let's talk about it from a promotional standpoint. Okay, this happens. They have a brawl on the stage a few weeks before the fight. What if the main event breaks his hand, punches the guy in the face? There goes your main event.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, but also, how about this? We've all been fucking talking about it for 5 minutes, and that's exactly what the powers that be want.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to watch a fight where both guys go, Man, I have all the respect in the world for you.
Yeah, Akiyama Bisping, fuck that shit.
No, I have all the respect in the world for you. I don't give a shit about that, man.
I agree.
But look, there's a difference between hyping a fight and throwing down at a presser. And beat down.
Yeah,
they
sort of stayed down. They sort of stayed down.
How many times do we see guys walk up, Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier at the exact same weigh-in, 30 seconds beforehand, were forehead to forehead, and nothing happened? Dustin Poirier didn't reach up and grab Conor McGregor by the throat, and Conor McGregor didn't reach up and grab Dustin Poirier by the throat. But when Daniel Cormier had his forehead up against John Bones Jones, he felt the need to push him on him.
And why isn't anybody giving John Anik anybody props for getting thrown through the fucking back?
Poor Dave Schaller. He got thrown around, dude. But, I mean, you know,
I want
this kind of shit, dude. This is the fight game. I want to see two guys that really want to fight each other. I don't want to see two guys that are going to go in there and be like, oh, let's jab it out all night. Get in there and fight.
You
two motherfuckers got to sit there in the middle of an interview and say, I'm going to kick your ass or I'm going to turn you into my wife, I don't give a shit.
I don't care about the shit talking. I'm talking about the physical altercation.
The physical altercation is bad for younger kids to watch.
Happen, bro.
I mean, if a young kid idolizes John Jones, and he idolizes him. You know, he's like, oh, this is my fucking man, Bones Jones this, Bones Jones that. And he ever gets pushed at a party in high school or middle school, and he thinks what he's got to do is fucking push forward and throw punches. That's not exactly the best thing either, though. So, yeah, it's a real touchy situation.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I understand both sides of the coin, but, you know, my thing is, you know, the UFC wants to try to be the golden rule, the standard of all. You can't allow this to happen on that big of a stage with your elite of the elite athletes, supposedly. And not only that, if this is what they need to do to build up a fight that we all know is going to be five rounds of boring shit anyway, then that's fucking...
I think this was just kind of a perfect scenario for this to happen, because Jones has received a lot of shit after the fight with Gustafson, and he needs to come in here and make a statement. I think he's bringing a lot more of an edge to himself in this fight. And
Daniel Cormier done said that he's going to lay on top. Daniel Cormier done said he's going to lay on top of John Jones for five rounds. He already said that.
He's going to pull a Ben Askren the couch. That's what we're going to do.
I'm not sure that he can.
Daniel Cormier is going to be ambient. He's going to put people to sleep. He's just going to – people are going to be bored if he does what he says he's going to do.
I'm telling you now.
That's the game plan, though, for 90% of the wrestlers out there. 90% of these guys that come from this high-level wrestling background just get you down and trap you there.
Yeah, they're a snuggie. That's what I call them all, snuggies.
Hey, hold on, guys. I'm going to see – we got a fan, I believe, who wants to jump in. Mike, is that you?
Yeah, I lost service, guys.
Hey.
What's up, Mike?
You want to jump in this conversation with us?
Definitely. No, he's
I don't know. I think I don't like Cormier at all. I think he's a bunch of talk. That's all he does is run his mouth. I want to see him back it up against Jones. I think him dropping from heavyweight because Kane and him are friends is a bunch of bullshit.
Yes.
I think, on the subject of the shit-talking back and forth or the pre-fight hype, I think that we all remember there's been two instances before a John Jones fight that there's been something going on. One was this one, we got in a fist fight, which is getting kind of negative publicity, and the other one was when he was at a fucking waterfall and he saved the lady from a robber's purse running up to him and apprehended him. Now, that story got him on Jay Leno, got him on David Letterman, and people ate that up. Like, the UFC champion is a hero, and that was great for him in the sport. And so then you go from that, hey, I'm going to go get a robber that's robbing a lady, run past Greg Jackson, hilarious story, but you're doing something good, to I'm going to get into a physical altercation with a fucking douchebag that pushes my face. It's just kind of like a mixed message, and it kind of confuses people. Are you a good guy? Are you not a good guy? Is it all an act? Was the chase after
the
guy in
the video
after?
They released? The UFC released their own fucking video today on that whole, I'm going to kill you, you're a pussy, you know, I really kill you. Look, they did that to hype it up. I understand that. I'm saying it's not the right image for the sport. Lopaki loves it. You know,
we're talking about the fight game. If you're over here looking for moral leadership, you're a fucking buffoon. You are a fucking buffoon if you allow your children to sit here and look at guys in the combat sport and expect this to be a superior moral leadership.
Yeah.
I think with fame, though,
with fame comes a lot of responsibility, man. If you're a famous singer of a band, people are going to look up to you. Maybe people aren't as enlightened as you, and maybe people aren't that into it. So you got to also take into account that you are somewhat impressionable. There's people there that are more impressionable than you and that don't see that, that don't look at it as a combat sport or this and that. They look at it as real life and this is what should happen. So it's really tough because it could really go both ways. And I agree. I'm a fighter. Fuck. We're trying to elbow people in the face. Like Nick Diaz says, there's not a fucking uniform for this sport, which I agree. We're trying to knee and knock people the fuck out. But at the same time, there is a little bit of responsibility when it's on a worldwide scale, just like anything. So, like I said, it's almost tough to take one side or the other, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, everyone's human, man. You can't blame Jones, and at the same time, you can only take so much shit talking.
Does anybody here thinks that Cormier has to finish Jones to be considered the champ and the shit talking to be backed up, or if he grinds out a boring ass decision?
Yes, of course.
Well, I'd like to see a stand up war. I don't want to see him come with that bitch wrestling, just laying on top of him.
100%, 100%.
You're going to talk all that shit. You got to back it up.
Exactly, dude. If you're going to throw hands at weigh-ins, you better fucking throw hands in the cage.
Especially if I'm paying $50 fucking dollars.
Yep. No, I'm with you.
I can help you out with that.
So let me ask you guys this, since we've got a great panel of guests, fighters, promoters, managers, and all that on tonight. Does anybody here think that either Jones or Cormier could beat who I now think is the number one contender, and that's Rumble Johnson?
I think Jones and Rumble would be a great fight. And I don't know. I think Rumble's got the power to do damage, but I see Jones coming out on top.
Well, I mean, I think Jones and Rumble's a great fight, but I love Anthony Johnson. He was a Machado jiu-jitsu guy and whatnot when he was taking some BJJ. But I think Cormier kind of beats Rumble by being fucking NyQuil and putting everybody to sleep by laying on him, where I think Jones and Johnson is a really interesting fight, but I just think matchup-wise, Cormier would pretty much be a nightmare for an explosive striker that doesn't like being off his back.
Yeah, even I'd see a good fight for Rumble. I'd love to see him fight Shogun or Evans. Evans said he wouldn't fight him, though. Yeah, Gustafson, that would be a sick one. Yeah.
Or what's his fucking name?
What would everybody think about
James Tahuna?
Rumble. Oh, Tahuna, that'd be interesting. But his chin's kind of weak.
I guess. Fabio Malbano.
You know, he might get touched and not wake up. What about rumbling of Alistair Overeem possibly making the drop to 205? What would everybody think about that fight?
I think there's a lot of interesting fights there. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, that would be good.
I think Overeem's chin's sort of weak, man.
But it might be weak compared to humongous heavyweights. You know, light heavyweight, he might have, you know, who knows?
I seen him, I was actually there, I'm from Boston, so I was at the Garden when he fought, what's
Travis
his name
Brown.
Here?
Travis Brown?
Yeah, Travis Brown, man. That was a sick fucking fight.
Yeah, Travis used to train with us down at the compound. That guy's a beast.
That was a sick fucking fight, man. Yeah, Brown, man. Those knees, man. I couldn't believe it.
And elbows now. Fuck, that guy's got them both.
Oh, yeah. You seen those elbows? Yeah, oh, my God. He's a monster.
Sean, what do you think about that attack method? Is that something that you see Travis Brown doing? You think, man, I need to remember that moving forward, because it seems to be fairly effective in a position that a lot of times you guys find yourself in when you're facing these wrestlers that have got you up against the cage, is those jackhammer elbows.
I think it opened a lot of people's eyes up. I mean, my girl Misha Nasiri at Bama, she fought some really, really good jiu-jitsu girl that ended up actually catching my girl in an armbar because she had like a million jiu-jitsu wins. So what we did is we planned exactly. We're like, she's going to push you against the cage, spread your legs, keep one overhook, and fucking rain those elbows down. And I think it's really a great technique for those people that like to, you know, cage ride you.
Hell yeah, it is.
Hey, guys, we got a fan who just joined us. Jeff, you with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, I know you want to touch on the role model issue.
Yeah, you know, that whole thing that went down with Jones and Cormier, I think it's really bad for the sport, you know, because UFC, it has been and is currently still really a pivotal spot in being accepted into mainstream. You know, I mean, every year it gets more and more accepted, but a lot of people's impression of fighters are big, dumb meatheads, you know, like Chaney or whoever said that it's like human cockfighting, which it has developed way beyond that now, you know, and a lot of these fighters I think are great role models for kids or whoever, you know. They are professional athletes that a lot of people do look up to, given it is fighting, but at the same time, it is really a sport nowadays, you know, and it's what these people do outside of the cage, I think, is a big thing, you know, like how many of these fighters are going out and giving back to the community or doing things to help better the lives of kids or presenting an opportunity for people to go out and compete in a sport that they didn't really know about or wasn't as big as it was until some of these fighters made it this big. And, you know, you got a world champion and a number one contender. It's bad for the sport. Like, you know, I just like to see the guys handling like professionals.
It's a little boring nowadays. It's also kind of why the sport's a little boring nowadays.
Good point,
you know,
though, Jeff. I appreciate
whole, like,
that, man.
This whole want to appeal to, like, the masses, I'm just not for that, man.
We got to also remember, we got to look at, and I'm with you guys. I mean, I'm, like, teeter-tottering back and forth, but we also have to kind of look at this from an outside perspective, what I just did with that guy's phone call. We've had two, quote-unquote, fans or just, you know, fucking spectators call in, and both of them said they think it's bad for the sport. So I'm not agreeing with them, but I'm a fighter, so I don't have an unbiased fucking opinion, and neither do any of us, honestly, and the two people that called in, so who knows, you know what I mean?
No. I didn't say it was bad for the sport.
I did.
So you know,
I think it's bullshit how it's being blown up so big, but it happens in boxing all the time, and it's never a big deal there, right?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, everybody got a laugh out of Shannon Briggs going and stealing.
But if we're comparing
what about
our
Mike Tyson beating up who the fuck did he beat up in the streets of Dublin that one night?
Yeah, but we're also trying, as a sport, it's trying to progress to the level of the NFL, the NBA, and they, you know, they're trying.
Ray Rice just knocked his wife out in a fucking elevator. This is what it's going to be like.
Yeah, I mean,
if we're trying to compare
boxing to MMA, we're in a world of fucking hurt.
Oh yeah. Well, everybody's talking about how fucking it's so bad with the Jones thing, but you guys hear about the Josh Grisby shit?
Oh my god, that was terrifying. I was fucking scared of that guy. Training a dog to attack your wife and I don't know.
Yeah.
I got fucking two daughters, and so I that was fucking disgusting.
Yeah, now they're trying to say that he's trying to say from taking so many punches to the head.
Oh, God. What a fucking cop-out.
Yeah, what a bitch.
Bitch.
Just
I agree.
Own your shit, man. You know? The only thing that's going to help him is that while he's in prison, when it gets around that he did that shit, that, you know, he may live a little bit longer because he can hold his own. But hopefully there'll be like enough guys there that deal with him, and he won't be on the next dollar for ball.
He couldn't hold his own in his last fucking four fights in the UFC. They got his fucking shit wiped all over the place, which is going to happen in jailhouse B when fucking Tyrone Horsecock is pushing his shit in for being a piece of shit.
Oh, damn.
One of the fans listening tonight, big shout out, Larry. Don't forget War Machine and his problems today that are become super public. Aren't they?
I didn't hear about that.
Beating up his girlfriend.
Oh, fuck.
And
Please.
Some dude. And some
yeah, he's
dude, right? He beat the and Christy Mack.
Yeah,
Bellator just dropped him.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's well, you know what? We can all agree those are instances that are definitely fucking bad for the sport.
Yeah.
Those things are bad for the sport. Totally, for sure. But, dude, a little pre-fight pushing and shoving, rolling around on the ground, man, let them get it
this
on.
Ain't going, this ain't going into the jiu-jitsu gym with your 9mm and your soon-to-be ex-wife, you know, and her fucking boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Forgot about that one.
Oh, yeah, I haven't. I still think that's one of the best, man. Stand off. He's got a pistol. Like,
yeah.
You've been fucking my
good old
Thiago
Silva.
Yeah.
Sean, what are the odds of us maybe seeing Bob Bass in a Metamoris event?
Well, Bob's, I mean, he would be down to fight somebody. Like, I know he would do an older guy. I mean, he's coming on 60 years old. You know, he's the first American black belt ever in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So that puts a big feather on his cap. Like, you're the first American to ever get your black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But pushing 60 years old, you know, he's like, I fucking talk shit to him all the time. I'm like, can you walk today, coach? And he's just like, fuck you, Sean. So you know, I don't know about that, but there is so many Metamoris fights that, like, I really want to see happen. I would love to see, like, I'd love to see Jeff Munson compete against Frank Mir. That'd be amazing. Or Roy Nelson, Jeff Munson in grappling at Metamoris. Or Cron Gracie versus Bill Cooper or Jeff Glover, you know, in Metamoris with Metamoris rules. I would love to see that stuff.
What do you think about Lister Barnett?
I think it's very interesting. I mean, it's a catch-as-catch-can wrestler versus a very, very savvy no-gi jiu-jitsu guy. They're both so high-level grapplers. It's hard to go against Dean Lister, but then again, it's hard to go against, you know, a high-level Eric Paulson guy like Barnett, who's so experienced. So I think it's really, really interesting. A lot more interesting than the main event of Chael versus Galvao. I mean,
come on, that's a joke.
Come
man.
On,
that's a chicken.
It's a joke. I mean, Galvao will tap that guy. He's gonna tap him in fucking 3 minutes. Anybody that thinks different is wrong. And if it goes.
Everybody's been saying that for the last week we've had on the show, the different shows that we have on this network. Every single person has agreed in under 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's anybody that knows I've been doing jiu-jitsu for, 14 years now under Bob and Hegan. And it's like, dude, come on. Like, I mean, I like Chael Badger, but how fucking long are people going to fucking ride his dick tail with his tongue? You know, it's like, yeah, he can talk shit. That's it.
Hey, well, something interesting about that matchup is 2 years ago, Andre Galvao and Chris Weidman had a match at Abu Dhabi. And Galvao almost tapped him at about the three-minute mark, and then Weidman came pretty close to catching him in a Dars and some other things. It wouldn't surprise me if it goes to 20 minutes and draws out, because all Chael really needs to worry about is sub-defense, you know? And if he's able to kind of control Galvao, pretty much like Weidman did, because if you watch the match, it was a pretty – it was kind of active, but, I mean, besides Galvao almost subbing him at the beginning, that was pretty much
it.
Yeah,
but Galvao,
Weidman stayed on top.
Yeah, but saying
Galvao
the fact all Chael has to worry about is Galvo's submissions. Are you fucking kidding me? Galvao's submissions are Andre Galvao. Like, yeah, that's all he has to worry about. That's like
dude,
saying if you fight Floyd Mayweather, all you got to worry about is his punches.
Look,
well,
Galvao,
I'm just saying that,
Galvao,
I mean, Weidman was
look,
able to last against him and did pretty
yeah,
well.
But,
and I would consider
look, but,
Chael Sonnen on the level.
But Weidman's a way better jiu-jitsu guy under Matt Serra than Chael Sonnen.
Yeah, but look, Galvao this year has been a different level this year. He's been performing, I mean, 88-kilogram gold, absolute gold, both at Abu Dhabi this year, Pan Am gold this year.
All absolute gold.
Yeah. And this year, he is taking gold in every event he's entered. Last year, he had some bronze and some silvers and some golds. He has found that niche this year. And I think he wants to make an example of Chael, and he's going to show everybody he can tap an American wrestler in under 3 minutes.
Or he's going
to
get
great. I would love to see it. I would love to see him tap him.
The more wrestlers that get beat by jiu-jitsu guys, the happier I get.
Is anybody else super excited to see Cornelius and Magalhães? I mean, that's
dude,
the one
any Keenan Cornelius
like,
match. Keenan Cornelius is a beast on the mat.
I think this is a great matchup. Honestly, I think the fans are going to get to see something that will have them in awe. Vinny's impressive on the ground.
I think Vinny subs him. I think Vinny subs him about 5-6 minutes.
Yeah, I think Vinny gets that sub. But I think it's going to be entertaining. I think if you were scoring it, the score will be 47-41 when somebody fucking gets tapped if it was a jiu-jitsu match.
Oh, yeah. And if you get Dale out there, that'll be pretty cool.
Well, what do you guys think about Royce Gracie or Halleck Gracie, Eddie Bravo? Do you think that'll ever come to fruition, or is that just a bunch of jabber-johns?
Jabber-johns.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it pisses Royce off to know that Hickson and Eddie are friends.
and Hickson's such the outcast, too.
I know. I think that's the only reason he's nice to Eddie Bravo. He's like, screw my brothers. They're stupid.
Hickson, like, I was the best. Eddie's fucking sick. Look at what he did to Horler both times. He tapped him once. And like, his credit, Horler didn't tap. But the only fucking reason he didn't tap that leg lock was pride. He was just, like, thinking, like, if I tap right now, I have to change my last name. Fuck that. Because you could see that was in. And Eddie had all the electric chair sweeps. I mean, come on.
Eddie said when he was talking to Joe Rogan about that match afterwards, he said that if he would have been able to wear pants, he would have really been able to finish that move more. But they changed the rules on him like right before the fight, where he had to change from pants to shorts, so he couldn't get all the leverage that he wanted on it. And that was, he said, that was like the defining thing.
I think Eddie didn't tap him because of respect. I think if Eddie would have cranked it, he would have tapped him, to be honest. I think if Eddie would have cranked back and really fucking, like, went a little bit, like, mean guy jiu-jitsu, like, kind of street BJJ, which he's capable of, I think he could have fucking ripped the leg off. I think he was trying to finish it with technique or a transition. But I think if he would have wrenched it, I really think Hoyler would have been in a different world. But maybe I'm wrong. I just think subconsciously maybe he was trying to think of so much BJJ and 10th Planet shit, instead of just like, fuck this, I'm going to crank it. Because I think if he looked back, he'll even admit, yeah, I could have, if I would have fucking wrenched on that, I would have got that shit.
Yeah, I mean, but did he really need to get the tap to show that?
He said that he would, like, hear it pop, and he'd look at Hoyler and be like, are you going to tap? And Hoyler would be like, nope. And he'd go back to wrenching on it.
Yeah, so
I mean, he didn't really need to get the tap to show the domination, though. He dominated Hoyler that match. Dominated him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys think it's interesting that Lister is at the sports book a -742 and Barnett is +710 to finish?
Holy shit. Really?
I don't know about that. Is that right? I'm not saying you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's right.
Galvao is
Well, then I'm gonna put some money
13.
Down.
Galvao is -14-13.
Sean the Destroyer lost $10,000 on that.
If Chael can go the distance, it's +306 if he can get a draw out of that match.
Huh.
These are some crazy odds, man. Chael is +1,400. Galvao's -1,400. Barnett's +700. Lister -742. Keenan Cornelius +141. Vinny Magalhaes +119.
That's
Ribeiro's
closer, but that's
+158. Medeiros is +161. Kit Dale +355. Gary Tonin +389.
Wow, that's a big
they
one.
I expect that fight to go to a draw. It's a
yeah, that fight's
going to
draw, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Same with Ribeiro and Medeiros. They've got that. It is expected to be a draw. And actually, even Cornelius and Magalhaes, they've got -209 on the draw. And in comparison,
wow.
Lister Barnett's a +198 to go the distance, which I think there's good value on that. The best value I'm seeing is a draw with Barnett and Lister at +198.
That's it. Put a shit. That's what I'm saying. Sean Loeffler put $10,000 on that.
Hey, can we get a
and
Kickstarter going?
And if Chael can go the distance, he's +306. +306 on a draw in Sonnen Galvao.
Dude,
no
Galvao.
No way. Galvao's finishing. You're losing your – if you bet against Galvao finishing Chael, you're losing your money. The guy is fucking on steroids. His cardio is going to be terrible. He's going to be strong. That's it. Galvao has dealt with that in the fucking absolute division his whole fucking career, especially this year. That's an easy match for Galvao. Easy match.
I know, but here's the thing for me. This is what I like about the match. Like, I know the outcome already, but I just like the fact that Chael knows the outcome, and he's still going to show up tomorrow.
He's getting a paycheck. He's not allowed to fight anywhere else. Of course he's going to show up. He's fucking not allowed to fight anywhere.
That's why they call him the American gangster.
I mean, dude, to me, that's the thing. Like, Chael puts himself in the worst spot. Sure, I'll fight John Jones on 8 days. I haven't been doing shit. Sure, I'll fight Anderson Silva all the time. Yeah, oh, Andre Gamboff, the best BJJ practitioner in the world? Sure, I'll fight him too. Why doesn't he just go and, hey, Crusher Kovalev, I got this clown over here, Chael Sonnen. He'll probably show up to fight you too, since Prima Donna Stevenson won't, that fucking pussy-ass motherfucker. Adonis Stevenson, the day you fight Crusher Kovalev is the day your career is over, so I understand why you don't want to fight him. But hang up the belt, you fucking bitch.
What? What did you
I know,
say?
You don't know much about boxing. Prima Donna Stevenson refuses to fight Crusher Kovalev, but 50-year-old Bernard Hopkins is going to fight his ass here and get knocked the fuck out in November.
I don't know, Hopkins, man.
I do not like that fight, man. I hate that fight.
It's a bad matchup for Bernard. It's a really bad matchup for Bernard. But that being said, the guy owns a percentage of fucking Golden Boy. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I get why he's doing it. And I understand, you know, Bernard's a real prideful guy. And he's not going to back down from any fight. But as a Bernard Hopkins fan, that is not a fight I want to see him in at all.
Stevenson's a bitch. So, and we know that.
Unfortunate.
I'm with you.
Well, shit. Let's talk real quick.
Why is everybody quiet? We start talking boxing. Everybody goes quiet.
No, I was about to jump in and say I wanted to get some opinions tomorrow night on the Lewis Palomino fight and the Gonzalez.
Luis Palomino? That guy's a baboon.
What do you guys think about him? Against Gonzalez. Gonzalez is on an undefeated, pretty good tear lately.
It's probably a decision. Realistically, it's going to be Gonzalez getting peppered and decision, you know, my opinion.
I agree with that.
I mean, what can you say? But the thing is, the only thing Gonzalez got is Gonzalez has some good, he's got really good body shots. He's pretty tough. He can move a lot. He's got to throw a shit ton of punches, though, to win that fight because he's going to be getting tagged with hooks. So, like, it's going to really have to – he's going to have to make it a dirty fight early and then, like, put on the quantity of punches and punch index to steal rounds later, which is going to be real, real fucking tough. But it's a much more interesting fight than the Hopkins fight, you know, straight up. There's a lot – I mean, there's other fights. So, like, Canelo Alvarez next fight, that's a guy who I think is the next big thing, regardless of what happened with Mayweather. Mayweather's the best defensive boxer that ever lived.
Dude, he
beat
the crap out of Arizlami Lara, dude.
That's what I was just
going
to say,
man.
Bro. Perfect timing. I was going to say, but you watch what he did to him. Oh, my gosh. He's a monster, and he's so young.
He outboxed an Olympic boxer at 23. I mean, everybody expects Lara to be like this world-class killer. And he just got put on notice, just like Mike Trout. And who are they talking about next for Canelo right now? Shit.
Not Bradley. Who was it? It was, I'd have to look
Jeff
it up.
Kirkland? Is it
yeah,
Jeff Kirkland?
Kirkland.
I think that's a sick-ass fight. And, you know, I don't understand why nobody tunes in to watch Triple G fight, but if anybody watched him decimate Gil, that was a fantastic performance, man.
I agree completely. And you know the other guy who I know a lot of people roll their eyes when I say this, and everyone fucking goes, oh, fuck. But, dude, I really respect and like Paulie Malignaggi. The guy is a fucking great commentator. He's great in interviews. He's great at doing color commentating. And I think he's really knowledgeable boxing-wise. And he's a beast and some of the best footwork you'll ever see. I love that guy, too.
Dude, Paulie is – and he's a great Twitter follow, dude. Paulie is a great Twitter follow.
I think boxing does a terrible job of marketing their big guys. I'm a huge boxing fan. Like I said, I boxed Golden Gloves and did the all the way to the Olympic trials. Lost to Antonio Tarver. He fucked me up. But, like I love boxing.
I fucking hate
boxing.
That guy, Sean. Tarver is just one guy that he just bugs the fucking piss out of me.
Yeah, he bugs the shit out of me with his fucking jab and cross, too. But,
Jermaine.
Boxing's terrible at marketing themselves.
Jermaine from Little Rock. He beat Tarver. What the hell was his fucking name? Dupree.
Dupree.
No, we're not talking about Janet Jackson's husband, fool.
It's not laughing at like Dupree. Jermaine.
Jermaine Taylor.
There's a lot of guys like Paul Williams. I think he's been thrown to the back too. He's a fucking contender. But there's so many. The boxing doesn't know what the fuck they're doing because they've got so much arguments between promotional value and percentage of production value with Golden Boy and then Showtime and this and that and HBO getting involved. There's so much politics. It's like, who knows anymore what's going on? You know, you watched a couple of years ago the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. You're like, that was fucking terrible, and they built that up. So, and then they don't make Pacquiao-Mayweather happen when it would have been the next fucking, Rumble in the Jungle. So I just don't get it. It's hard for me to get that, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand it either, but I have heard that Nonito Donaire does want a rematch with Riggin, though, so... Yeah, it seems like that while boxing doesn't really know what the fuck to do, they're kind of like blindly falling into some really good fights. And I kind of think right now boxing's in an area where if people were paying attention, they'd see that there's a lot of guys out there that are like that Hagler, Hearns, Leonard, those
yep.
I mean, obviously not in the heavyweight division. But, I mean, even, Shannon Briggs, dude, he's trying to make shit happen. And, unfortunately he's just got the two boring brothers from Russia over there that just going to jab
yeah,
their way through life.
But one of those brothers probably gave him enough brain damage to eat another one of his brother's salads.
And I can't keep them two sons of bitches straight anyway. Vladimir,
yeah, I
think, Vitaly.
They're both the biological kids of Drago from Rocky, right?
As far as I know. Hey Jason, we were talking about World Series of Fighting, man. Are you guys paying attention to Vila Hempelman? And if Hempelman wins, is that a fight on the radar for Redding House?
Definitely paying attention to that fight. And if Hempelman does get past Vila, obviously that'd be a fight that we'd be open to. Just really comes down to what WSOF wants to do,
Yeah.
But, we're trying to make a return come October, November range, because Josh has a new full-time job now, working as an accountant, because he just graduated this past June. So it's just a matter of being able to assure that he can get the time off from his job to, be able to go, come fight week, because with his new schedule, he's in the gym every night. I've been getting reports of him going over to 8-quarter lane and training with Trevor Prangley now 2-3 days a week, and Daniels and some of them guys are going over and training with them over at Warrior Camp and this and that. So it's a good thing going on right now. I like the vibe.
Does he have an opponent for that for his next fight?
No, we don't.
Is he looking to call in? I don't want to fucking stir the pot or anything for him, but like, is there anybody who he's like, that's who I want?
Here's the thing that we look at. We're going to fight whoever's in front of us. Whoever WSOF wants us to fight us, we're going to fight. And honestly, aside from Marlon, hats off to him because we fought him already in the inaugural title fight. Don't really see too many people in the bantamweight division giving Josh a hard time with the training camp. And we're ready to prove and work our way back in,
Yeah, he's exciting, man.
The kid has a ton of heart. You guys and the fans might not have seen it, in the recent WSOF marathon, but, I found out about it that night when we were talking after the fight was over with. The doctors were trying to get Josh to stop. You know what Josh said to the fucking ringside physician for the Vegas Athletic Commission? I have one more round. Get the fuck away from me.
Yeah, that's a fire. That's a fire, right?
And then out of nowhere, even though the kid couldn't even walk on one leg, he starts throwing head kicks and shit at the end of the fifth round. Go figure.
Yeah.
Hey, so,
yeah, that, I mean,
Jason, I want to ask you, since we got you on here, Lopaki brought it up. Who would you prefer to see Josh face between the Hempelman and Vila fight?
Well, we've already beat Vila once, so I would prefer a shot at Hampelman, because to tell you the truth, I mean, I'm a little intrigued to see what Josh Hill can do with Marlon, but from what I've seen of Marlon's opponents in WSOF, you know, I think Hampelman and Josh will give him the best fight.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Marlon, I mean, can we all agree without pissing anyone off that Marlon could be pushed more with some opponents recently?
I think only the two guys from the Pacific Northwest have really tested Marlon.
Yeah.
That was Redding House and Hempelman.
Yeah. Those are the only two true tests, because everybody else he just ran through.
Yeah. So I'd like to see him face some adversity now. Like, not, I mean, yeah, he's had some other stuff going on in his career, but I'm saying, like, right now, last 6 months, the next 6 months, I'd like to see, him face a guy that's had put some adversity at 35.
I'd like to see World Series of Fighting sign my freshly released buddy Anthony Burchak, the inaugural MFC Bantamweight champion, and with the Mirai and Burchak.
You know what? I'll tell you what, bro. I wish they would. If he would go to WSOF, we'd be more than happy to welcome him to the WSOF.
Yeah, I mean, that MFC.
I'd be more than happy to, and I'm pretty sure Josh would agree with me.
We'd be more than
happy to welcome him to the WSOF. And if he wants to put that MFC signing record on.
And that'll piss Pavlich off.
And I have nothing against Anthony. I've heard nothing but good things about the kid. I heard he's an outstanding good kid, and I've seen some of the things, charitable stuff he's done in his community, from him and Mercedes posting things that they were doing. And I have nothing but respect, but, you know, if you want to come in with a better organization, we'd be more than happy to welcome you.
Then he's going to be fighting the Lions.
You know, I tell you what, though, and I wish it was being streamed, but it's not, and we'll have to wait for the play-by-play to find out. I'm ready for Sunday for a minute, the Lady Killer, to get back in there and do work with Elena Schaefer.
Chaos of the Casino 5.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the Chaos of the Casino.
Yeah.
Amanda's got a tough fight, but I believe, you know, with, you know, the judo that she's able to play with when it comes to Enoch, I believe she'll be prepared.
I know this is kind of a fucking retarded question, but who was the main event, or was there anything that happened interesting at the King of the Cage at San Manuel that happened the same day, yesterday is Tachi? Was there anything interesting that happened?
I know a couple of things. One, the Joker won in, like, ridiculous fashion, Anthony McDonald. But for some reason, the MAV TV scrubbed the recording of the event. I'm not sure why.
I haven't been able to find
it. No, the main event was Chris Cooley and
Chris Foley. And the 8-0 guy, the 9-0 guy, that 9-0 guy.
Yeah.
The undefeated guy, right? Who won that fight?
Yeah. The fight didn't happen, and I can't really say anything more than that right now.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what I knew. I didn't hear much about anything, and I knew, and Cole's a good kid, like the urban legend, like I really
see,
like
Chris
that
is,
guy.
Chris is one of my buddies, and the fight didn't happen.
That's weird, yeah. More on that later.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I'm ready for Sunday.
It's funny too because like I just got done talking to Chris like right at the beginning of the show, and so it was kind of weird. Like that's why I didn't really ever touch on King of the Cage. I was like, damn, I don't know.
Let's text Chris to have him call in and start some controversy. You're like, no, please don't do that.
Here's my question for you guys. What do you guys think about next weekend when Lauren Murphy makes her UFC debut against Sarah McMahon?
Dude, she's going to beat that ass, son. Lauren Murphy going to put a beating on Sarah McMahon. I love, dude, you all know that I'm a big-ass Lauren Murphy mark, dude. I love watching her fight.
Yeah, I love a lot of things about Lauren Murphy.
Hey, does anybody see Bader being able to give OSP any serious problem?
Dude, I just want it perfectly known that when Ryan Bader announced that he was about to sign a contract, Karen Bryant's dumbass messaged him saying,
who's he going to fight? And I told them both who he was fighting before it was ever announced. That broad is stupid. She needs to get fired.
Well, that's just, I don't know about fire, but that was pretty dumb. Bader, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's almost like a kind of a low-key Jones-Cormier thing, you know? I mean, it's like the same deal. I mean, it's the same type of deal you're looking at.
That's true.
Do you think OSP can sleep him? Can OSP sleep him?
I think OSP puts him out, yeah.
Yeah, he can knock him the fuck out for sure. Or he can just hit him hard enough to where he gets caught in guillotine by past prime time. No, I didn't say that.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that and this is Chris, the Urban Legend Coley talking. No.
Trill Nation, bitch. Trill Nation, dog.
What do you guys? What did everybody think about the big Ben Saunders deal? It was from Titan letting him go back to the UFC. Do you think he makes a serious run, or is he a one and done?
I don't think he's one and done.
I don't think he's one and done, but it was kind of, dude, if you look at his career on, I had a conversation a couple months ago. It's like, I like Ben Saunders. Killer B is awesome. But, dude, if you look at his career, it's like fucking crazy. It's like he went from the top organization all the way downward, but now he got back to the UFC. So it's just like, man, that's got to be rough to be like, hey, you're in, you know, UFC. Now you're in Bellator. Now you're in World Series Fighter. Now you're in Titan. It's just like, I thought this was supposed to go the other way, but now he's back in the UFC.
Sean, as a fighter, what does that tell you about Titan that 2 weeks out from their event that they'll let the main event go to Zuffa like that? This purely is like a fighter standpoint. And then, Jason, after Sean answers, if you could answer on that.
Well, I think it means that people are obviously very terrified to put up a big stink of anything to do with going against the UFC, which is probably smart for them. And it also opens doors to working other champions. And for Legacy, you got to look – for Titan, I mean, you got to look that they can use this as a huge selling point that if you do well in our organization, you can get to the UFC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a win for Ben, obviously. It's a win for the fans. I saw him do well with his clinch in Bellator and with somewhat exciting in the UFC. It's definitely a win for the UFC because they get an Ultimate Fighter who they invested a lot of money in back. And it's a win for the organization saying, yeah, it sucks, our main event's gone. But that being said, if you fucking fill in and you take this fight, who knows what happens? You could be the next, you know, Pat Cummings getting called up at 4-1 or 5-0 to get in the big show. So if you sell it the right way, it's all about the twist, you know. But if you get down to the brass tacks, it kind of fucks the event.
But 2 weeks out from you being a main event,
I tell you what, I
just got one thing to say, bro. Like Titan's slogan is fighters first and fight for the fans and fighters first. You know, they publicly stated they have a Zuffa out in their contract from day one since the new regime started. And,
well,
you know, all that says is that they're a man of their fucking word and they honored their contract. And they honored their word instead of being a dick and saying, no, we need you, yada, yada, yada. And they honored his word. I mean, I could speak from experience with somebody else that we just went through this less than a month ago that was supposed to fight on that same card. And it all turn of events happened in a matter of nine hours.
Throw out a name.
Literally, they announced it at 2:00 in the afternoon,
dude,
that somebody was fighting on the card. And then 9 hours later, I'm on the phone with them explaining the circumstances, and they gave us our blessings. And then
can you tell who that is?
Heffer Escudero.
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody else.
Well, dude, this main event at the upcoming Titan 29 went from Riddle Saunders to Landy Jones. Well, obviously it started with Landy Jones Saunders and then went to Riddle, but all within like the span of 36 hours, you've had three different fights now booked for the main event.
So now
you're
going to
find someone to face Jose.
Yeah, I mean, but like you just said, and you said it perfectly. That means they're man of their word. I mean, they really are fighter friendly because they could.
I have nothing bad to say about my experience with Lex or with Jeff, man, and Joe.
You see what I mean? Like
those guys have all been on point
and
everything that I've ever discussed with them, and they've honored their commitments and their word.
That's why fighters have to support, or us as fans, or anybody listening to this show. Those are the type of fucking organizations you guys should be supporting, because they're really helping guys like me, guys like Ben. Like they're really helping guys out like that. So that's where the fans need to throw some of their dollars out in the local shows. Go out to that show, buy some fucking beers and hot dogs, and really support. That's awesome. You know, they could have fucked Ben, and he could be. And Duke was not going to want to deal with a lawsuit with them. And they did the opposite. So that's the kind of people that need to be given props to.
Now, Jason, let me ask you, as somebody, because, you know, the other manager on the show tonight's gone, but, you know, as somebody who deals with that, you obviously deal with organizations who are just the exact opposite. They're dickholes, and they don't want to let a fighter go. How frustrating is that as a manager to deal with when the bigger show comes calling and an organization says no?
It's very frustrating, but, you know, here's the thing, and this is something that I stick with and I stick by because, to me, I'm a man of my word, and I'm ethical, and I don't do unethical. You know, I'm not in this business because I'm trying to get rich. No, because if I was the case, I'm in the wrong business. I'm in this business because I like fighting for people that deserve fighting. You know, myself and Chuck Wickard, man, we have a family atmosphere at MMA United. All our athletes that we work with, we've handpicked, you know, because we get hit up about representation from different athletes all the time, and a lot of them we say no to because we're not interested in bringing a bad apple into our tree. We like fighting for the people that deserve that opportunity, and that's what we do. And, you know, at the same time, we sign a contract, and just because of the organization won't...
Jason, cut you off.
Was that? Did you hear that?
Jared Papazian just won unanimous decision 4 minutes ago, 30-27 on 2, 29-28 on the third card. Okay, sorry, Jason, go ahead and finish.
As I was saying, we did sign a contract, and we will honor our commitments. Even though I might not be happy with the situation, we're still going to stick by our word because nobody could say nothing negative about us or myself, Chuck, or the athlete, you know, in question. Because we're honoring our commitment.
And the fans and the people listening to this show though need to know, Jason, there's not a lot of guys out there like you. You are a good guy in a somewhat, not shitty, but you know what I mean, industry where there's a lot of people in there just trying to make a buck. So people out there that are thinking, oh man, these MMA managers must all be like that. No, it's not. Most managers, unlike you, are going to throw guys to the wolves to make their 20% or whatever it is. And so people got to know that if you find a good manager, if you find a good guy like Jason, that's where your loyalty needs to lie, because they'll guide you right into the big shows, and they'll have relationships with people to where the promotions will let the fighters have to go to the UFC, where if you're just with some fucking random or guy trying to make a buck, those guys are going to be terrified to shake the boat, and you're going to get screwed. So you got to give props to where props are due, like Jason, so that's pretty cool.
You know, and the other thing, too, that I key on to as well, and, like, people don't understand, like, I want to get involved in management. Like, it doesn't happen overnight. I've been doing this almost 5 years, and it took me almost 5 years to get to where I am now. But the first year when I started, I worked with two athletes and spent that whole year just networking, building my contacts, and kind of understanding the game and just feeling people out and picking their brains. And then once I got comfortable with it after that first year, I started exploring new clients. You know?
Yeah, people got to know that too. Because if anybody that's out there is like, I'm going to manage the local kid that's good, you're only doing that kid an injustice by not getting it with somebody with real contacts, with the real base in the sport.
Well, not just that, but the other thing too, like they don't understand what goes into it. Like my sister, my son, even my son's mother, you know, we haven't been together in 13 years, you know, when I'm at the football field with my son, is playing Pee Wee football first year, Monday through Thursday, 6 to 8, I'm at his practice. He looks over and even other people that come watch and they see me because I'm pacing the field 90% of the time because something's going on and I have to address it. You know, there's a very big commitment that you have to make to be able to invest yourself into the athletes to make sure that everything goes and they get the opportunities that they deserve, you know, and it's not about you. You know, do I enjoy staying up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because I have to talk to an organization in a different time zone sometimes? No, but I do it because it's what needs to be done, you know. And that's
dude,
you know.
I don't care who you
don't
are.
Don't make up
you
bullshit,
Jason. Yeah, dude, look.
2 or 3 in the morning anyway. That's
dude.
Just when the damn strip clubs are closing down and you're just now headed home. So don't act like you're being
off. Listen here,
out.
Motherfuckers. Just because you fucking got your fleshlight at home to keep you up late at night to entertain yourself.
Hey, Jason, don't you start hating on the fleshlight, motherfucker.
That's right.
And let me tell you, let me tell everybody on the show, if he's bitching about sitting up at 2 o'clock in the morning waiting for M1 to call him, that is a problem all of us wish we had.
Right?
But
so,
here's the other thing
nice try, brother.
Here's the other thing you got to remember, too. Time difference. Guys are getting out of the gym out of the Pac Northwest.
Dude, I talked to
9,
the owner
10 o'clock.
Of
it's 1
Rough
o'clock in the morning
China.
Lying in Florida, bro, and I'm getting
dude.
Calls from either day from Dave Cushane,
hey,
Lee
it
Morrison,
don't matter. Look,
Dick Person.
Dude, I got people
it's
from
a revolving
India,
door,
China,
brother,
Bangkok.
And a job that I accept.
Dude, I got people from
you're
all over
go
the world
Bangkok?
Calling me, too. Yeah, dude, just like Lepaki, both of us have people messing with us from Africa, from Germany, from, you know, Canada, all over the world. Dude, how many times
Norway.
Do you guys –
Yearn.
My favorite
Norway.
Is –
Yearn.
Dude, Joel Resnick over at Ruff, he'll call me at, like, fucking 3 a.m. What are you doing? I'm like, motherfucker trying to sleep, you know? But look, I mean, dude, it happens. It's the business we're in. Our connections, our friends, our business partners are all
it,
over the world.
Because here's the key thing that you probably haven't heard from another manager to say this, and I'm going to say this now. It's something that I very truly believe in. At the end of the day, when an athlete does sign with you, you know, people get that misperception, like the other gentleman talking about, oh, let me just get my percentage and let me do this, let me do that. What people fail to realize is that those athletes that compete and are active depend on you to create opportunities so they can not only support themselves and further their career, but also take care of their family,
yeah.
You know? And not everybody takes it serious. I do. And that's why I do the things that I do to make sure the opportunities come to these guys. You know, at the end of the day, it's not just my own personal life things that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. I also have 37 other people's lives that are in my life on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Yeah, I think most of my old managers before I got the belt from the UFC were more worried about the back page girls in the city I was fighting in than my fucking sponsors.
God damn.
Well, you should have told
and that's a
that
shout-out,
you
and that's a shout-out from showing off with all my fucking old managers. Hi, guys.
Thank you. Oh, shit.
And for those of you who don't know, Backpage is a website where you get hookers for really, really cheap. So there we
yeah,
shout out
like
to them, too.
It's like adultentertainment.com. It's like adultentertainment.com.
Now, do they take bitcoins? That's the question. Can
they
I
do.
Get
they do
oh,
take
that's
bitcoins.
A good...
it's a good way to, you know, keep your escort service on point for no matter what town you'll be in.
I'm yep. taking notes.
I love, dude, Bitcoin's the way to go, man. I was checking that site out. You can buy, like, 60 tons of cocaine with a Bitcoin. I was like,
dude,
and they can't crack
it. I literally invested in Bitcoin, like, 2.5 years ago. My friend's like, you're crazy. And I'm like, no way, bro. I was like, when drug dealers fucking hit me up, I'm going to have so much fucking pull in fucking Bogota. And, you know, it's all working out now.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Did you really? Hold on, Hold on, wait a second. Sean. Did you really invest in Bitcoin?
I actually did really invest in Bitcoin, yeah.
Wow, man. So what did you think about the whole
Mount Gox closing? Fuck that.
Yeah.
Well,
were you affected
I mean,
by that at all?
Yeah. Yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, when I bought Bitcoin, they were going for literally like a couple hundred, and then they went up to 9 grand for a little bit. And I was just like, oh, fuck, you know, like I'm going to be stoked. And so now, you know, Walmart actually, I mean, this is a whole other discussion. It has nothing to do with MMA, but there's a lot of like green cards and Walmart really fucked me over on that. So now actually I got out of that, and my next thing is, which is going really good, is coffee futures and cotton futures. Dude, those things are fucking blowing up. And you can make a pretty penny in a couple months if you put, you know, the, like short stocks on coffee and cotton futures. And that, and I manage fighters too at the compound and stuff. And I try to tell my guys all the time, I'm not the type of manager because I'm more of a fighter that says this or that. I tell my guys, invest, dude, be smart. Like, you know, I went to school. You guys look at these options and look at what you're going to do with your money. You're young. You can ride it out, put money in the stock market. But I'm also a gym owner. So I look at things a little bit different, and I've got, you know, daughters and shit and child support. So I've got to, you know, put stuff away to stay away from my crazy bitch exes from taking all my money. So I got to invest it. So I'm in the coffee and cotton futures.
I would love to do a show with you and Bristol Marunde, because Bristol has taken a lot of his fight money and parlayed that into house flipping, so that he flips so many houses right now he has a hard time training to fight because he's so busy making real money on the side and that he realizes that there's no money to be made in fighting. But
not bragging, but I started doing better for myself when I did get injured in the UFC. I mean, since then, I've bought a house, a condo. I drive a fucking I'm not bragging. I'm just saying I drive a fucking Cadillac. I've been investing. I own two gyms. You know, I get to go to Catalina whatever the fuck I want. And, like, that's a lot of also, you know, I've got to give credit to my dad, Rick, and my mom and my stepdad that, you know, one was a police, you know, chief and helped run a police department. And then my mom's husband was a vice president of Hewlett Packard and stuff. So I got a lot of good guidance too. So I was very lucky that my mom married somebody smart and then my dad's smart. So I had good guidance. But yeah, now I run my own portfolio, but I'm big into futures and stuff like that. And I've looked into a lot what Bristol Moran's done with the house flipping and short sales. He's right on point. You know, he's got some more than me to put down liquid wise so he can make those investments, but he's done it the right way. And I have nothing but respect for people that love business. Cause that's me, man. I watch Mad Money more than I watch fucking MMA. You know, I'm sitting, you know, doing that stuff. So it's interesting.
Yeah,
topic.
It frustrates the shit out of me so often to hear these guys complain about what they get paid, and then I see guys like you and Bristol, and it's like, dude, why aren't you two you fucking motherfuckers instead of start crying? Look at these guys that are doing shit with the money they are making so they don't complain.
Yeah, if you have $1,000 and you make it from a fight, like it's like that, there's no reason that you cannot parlay that into a very healthy investment, especially with, you know, mutual funds and whatnot, and you're fucking 20 to 30 years old. Don't fucking tell me you can't put money in the stock market. You can't invest in Marvel or you can't invest in Disney and wait 40 fucking years, or put it with a cosign in your kid's name or your wife or mom's name to make it safe, and so you're vested if you lose it. There's no fucking excuse. I talk to these guys and I think the same thing. I'm sure Jason would agree with me. Half the fighters out there, fucking 95% of fighters out there have no ambition to really do anything but say they're a fighter and get some pussy at a bar, you know, and then they're working at Dick's Sporting Goods. So if you have ambition and you're smart, you're going to be able to make a life for yourself, because this is a multi-billion-dollar industry and you just have to work hard. And not a lot of people are willing to do that anymore.
So damn true, man. I would love to have you guys on to talk about how, you know, to do kind of like an education course on how these fighters can really prepare themselves for the future, or if they got hurt, what you know, you have a fallback plan. You know, you even said your injury was a blessing in disguise. It allowed you to do all these things and focus more on this. So,
no, it gives you a different perspective. And then, like I said, the injury, as not sentimentally, but it made me think, well, fuck, I'm never fighting again. And I'm looking at my kids, and I go, I don't want to have to explain why they're taking cold showers because there's no gas in the house. I don't want to have to explain why every fucking meal is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I want to give them a good life. And so I just, you know, put my head to the grindstone and said, what can I do? Let's look into this other options besides getting punched in the face or punching people in the face. And I think a lot of people just are mentored the wrong way, you know?
Dude, you're 100% right. And this is not getting off subject. I know you said that twice. Look, this show, first of all, is an open platform for anyone. But this is related to MMA. This is no different than college football. These young superstars who come up who have a 3 or 4 year life expectancy at the UFC level at best need to take that money and invest it so when they are gone from that, they can be a Matt Lindland. You know, they could be a Bob Sapp. They could do these kind of things with their lives afterwards because they invested smartly.
I don't know that I would use Bob Sapp as an example, but...
Dude, $10 million fucking bucks! $10 million on toilet paper,
Yeah, Bob Sapp is a genius. Bob Sapp is a genius. Well, he's got a genius account, and that guy fucking invested in, like, SpaghettiOs right at the right time, and Visa. He got into a percentage. That guy's pretty smart, or he had smart economic advice. And, like, I try to tell my fighters, like, at the compound, these guys come, most of my guys are Marines. So a lot of them are Marines because I'm the closest gym to Camp Pendleton and the largest gym in Oceanside. So I tell them, I go, listen, you guys are going to get pensions and you're going to get paid by the Marine Corps. You can take this money. You can get 0% loans on houses. You can get in with no money down because you're a vet. Like, you guys need to listen to this. And I tell them, and then I teach them, dude, learn how to wrap hands. Learn how to hold mitts and be a mitt man. Learn how to fill out a contract to sign somebody up at my gym. Not because it benefits me, because you might have an opportunity to be an assistant manager here or a coach here to where you've got some fights and accolades in your fighting. So, hey, I'll hire you. But then I know on the back end that if I'm in fucking, you know, fucking Naples, or if I'm with, you know, my chick in Australia or my family, I don't have to worry about business getting really fucked up. I can sit there and go, I can trust you. And I tell these guys, learn the business side of things. Jason probably tells the people the same thing. It's like, dude, fuck fighting. And use everything you can for knowledge to give your family something when you're 40, 50, 60 years old, you know?
Yeah. Well, not just that, since you're talking about with the vets, most of those guys are on a rotation, man, going overseas for 7 month or a year deployment. Those dudes,
yep.
Especially guys that are single, they're getting paid, those
yep.
guys, all the defenders. And you know what? A lot of them, you know, some of them are smart with their money when they come back, and some of them piss it all away, man. But those ones that come back, if you're training them, bro, I'd definitely be offering some advice for them ways, because they're not going to be – not all of them are career guys that'll do
oh,
a 20. They,
no,
I might only do a 4-year or an 8-year enlistment and then just be done with it, man.
Yeah, like, I know Tuesday was National Night Out for Fight Back Against Crime. I brought 4 of my fighters, and we volunteered for, like, 300 kids in San Marcos to do, like, situational awareness for kidnappers or rape or worst-case scenarios, and telling them, you know, the kids, you know, hey, I know it sounds scary for parents when we have the parents and kids separated, but you want to tell your kids to scream, to yell, to dig their fingernails in, to save another kid, because our worst-case scenario is your kid gets taken out. And I explained to my fighters when they're watching me do this, they're like, why are we doing all this stuff? I was like, trust me, dude. This is now we're on the front page of the Union Tribune yesterday because we're doing
yeah.
charity work, and your name as a fighter is on there. You can use that on a resume. You can use that in a job interview saying, hey, I'm a mixed martial artist, but I've always loved numbers, and being a banker would be really an awesome thing to do, and I've volunteered in the community. And then they start to get it, like, oh, I get it. And you're like, dude, you're not doing this for networking. You're doing this for a resume, for later on down the line, that if you're working with the city,
yep.
if you're working with the council, if you want to put a business license in for a fucking house or a fucking business in San Marcos, you can come back with that newspaper article and be like, hey, National Night Out in 2014, I volunteered to really help this community. I love this community. If you guys could help me get into this you know, industrial building right here to start a gym, that all pays off. And I just don't think enough coaches do that. And I might look like a big fucking tattooed retard, but I really try to help guide some people. It's not like I'm getting a percentage of it.
I have to agree with you 100%, because I'm going to tell you 2 instances, and one of them I have to say is the most rewarding part of anything I've done in my MMA career on the business side of things. Well, the first one is a couple months ago, they were doing an event project for the rescue squadron up here. I don't know if you've ever been on the East Coast, but I live by Patrick Air Force Base. And
nice.
Their 302nd rescue unit, actually the same unit that went and got Latrell, like the PJX. Like, they're constantly gone on deployments and stuff like that. And they were doing a vet project event for to raise money for that, something that was going on with that unit that they were doing. And Keon Caldwell, who fights for WSOF,
yeah.
I tried to get a couple other people I contacted that I know in Florida. They're like, oh, well, do I get a per diem for God? I'm like, no, it's a charity event. What's
it's charity, you motherfucker,
You can't come for a couple hours? Keon drove 5 hours down from Georgia, came down here, brought down from his last fight, event poster signs, signature shirt, stuff like that, gave them away, sat down and hung out with the troops, bro, for like 8 hours. And actually now we're in the middle of coordinating a combative seminar, because he wants the major was so impressed with him, he wants him and a couple other guys to come in and spend a day and do a combative seminar with the PJ.
Well, hey, if you want, I trained under, if you know Dan Anasano, Bruce Lee's main student, I trained under Dan Anasano and Todd Corving since I was 8 years old almost, like doing stick fighting, knife fighting, weapons disarmed. I actually work with the police academies down here, and I teach twice a month on Camp Pendleton at the BRC, the Recon Marines, for weapons disarming and defanging a snake. I'd pay my own flight and fucking volunteer right now on air to fucking pay my own flight and go out there and help those troops with you 100%. I'll do that. If you give me the information,
cool.
I'm there 1,000,000%. I'll bring as much shit as I can get, and I'd love to do that, just so you know. If you hit me up, consider it done.
Absolutely, brother. Once we get it all finalized, I'll definitely be in touch with you about it. You know,
do it. Because
and then another thing, too, that was kind of stoked about that event, like, I have to give them a shout-out for this, MMA Signatures. I don't know if you guys have the memorabilia company, AJ Hiller and his wife, the husband and wife duo. He didn't have to do this, bro. He sent me, like, 15 8x10s with Hendo, Frankie Egger, and the many more guys that they use for raffle to raise money for this.
I'm going to email Keon Caldwell tonight just to give him a shout-out and a thank you, as many other people should, too, because it's guys like that that drive 5 hours and give back that I have the utmost respect for. Like I said, I got family in the military. My dad was a police officer, and it's bullshit when these guys won't give back. I mean, and then it comes back full circle. So you've got half the guys giving, you got Keon Caldwell doing stuff like that, and you working with these guys doing awesome stuff for the vets, and then it goes full circle back into, then you watch a bunch of guys push each other on stage trying to get fucking more sponsors, you know, before a fucking title fight. It's just such a 180.
And the other thing, which was the most rewarding for me, was with Julio Gallegos back in 2012, 2 years ago. We fought in the main event in Tampa against Yasmani Katabiza. Julio has a foundation called GJG Worldwide, working with cancer patients and survivors. He's very adamant about, you know, people submit their names, I fight for you, goes and visits the kids and children hospitals up there in Lexington, Kentucky, where he's at. Doesn't have to do these things, but he does it.
That's awesome.
We were able to connect with a survivor group of kids that are in remission. And when I was able to pull it off with the promoter self, Joe Valdez, give him a shout-out, RFC, talking with the Florida Commission when they allowed it, they allowed two kids to be honorary cornermen with Julio. Get in the cage, bro. Then I tell you what, man, it was one of the most rewarding feelings for me, you know, in anything I've done. And like the foundation actually sent us both letters thanking us for the experience to give the kids. And, dude, I'll tell you what. I'm usually not too happy about opening my mail, but, you know, that particular day when I got that letter and looked at it, like, I was super stoked, you know?
Well, I don't know if you guys know, but my return fight after 3 years, which was June 20th, was on 29 Palms Marine Base, and I fought for $1 and gave $1,999 of my fight purse to the Wounded Warrior Foundation, and I put a flak jacket on over my sponsorship shirt, and I told my sponsors, I'm fucking wearing a flak jacket out, holding a guide on. This fight's for these fucking troops that are stationed in the middle of the desert, going to these different countries, defending us. And I gave $1,999 to the troops. My fight check was $1, and I wore a flak jacket over my sponsors just because, like, people need to see, like, guys doing the right thing. Like, and I'm not some fucking saint. I've got my other business endeavors. I don't need fighting to make my fucking life. I'd like to step foot and actually fight in the UFC cage, but I fucking, like, my hat's off to guys like that, dude. That's awesome. Like, that's awesome.
Like we were saying earlier with that, there's just stuff that's good for the sport where it makes it show that fighters are like good people. They're not just these big meatheads out there. There's people trying to get back to the community.
Well, and that's the thing that pisses me off with some of the mainstream media. You know, you want to pick up on Fuck It Tonight, War Machine with that bullshit and domestic violence, you know, all that nonsense. But yet you don't pick up on the story about Keon doing this or with this gentleman doing what he did with the combative seminar, stuff like that, or any kind of...
Dude, what about, you know...
Jay, that's because modern society has denigrated so far down that this fucking cunt, Kim Kardashian, is releasing a book of fucking selfies, dude.
Selfies.
Dude, this is
selfie
the kind
book.
Of shit that this fucking society wants to see. They don't care that, you know, the fucking U.S. government is actively fucking over veterans and not taking care of them, and that there's fighters like Keon Caldwell and Sean Leffler and managers like Jason Hook out there that do more for these fucking fighters than our own government does at fucking times. You know, they don't care about that shit. They just want to fucking be these shallow, fucking selfless fucking zombies that just fucking walk around and don't give a shit about anything.
Look, Lepaki, because I you're 100% right on this. You know, we did that interview with the kid who won Ultimate Fighter Canada about his favorite foods. Okay, that got three times the amount of shares, likes, hits, than did the press release about us helping outfit 32 kids with fight gear. And that's...
Wow.
Dude,
that's bullshit.
Yeah, it's crazy because we worked hard, me and everybody at MMA Madhouse, to get 32 kids who live in poverty everything they need for training. And that got
less love.
Less love than what this guy, his favorite fast food was.
Huh. Yeah, it shows you something
about
the world we're living.
People are fucking disgusting.
Yeah, it shows you about the world we're fucking living.
Yeah, it's fucked, man.
Well, look, on that note, man, we got like about 5-6 minutes left. Hey, I want to start with you, Sean, man. Anything you want to get out, shout-outs, any information so people can find you, or if you just say, want to say, hey, fuck the world, whatever, that's your time. Take a minute.
I will say fuck the world, but I'll give shout-outs. So fuck the world. And then aside from that, a couple quick things. I fight August 23rd versus a pretty good guy at Sikwan Casino. Hopefully I get by him. Like I said, I'm trying to take my career kind of a different direction, using it for different outlets and trying to get my fighters opportunities. And then we're on the – I've got four guys from the compound in Oceanside. We got Blake Troop, we got Misha Nasiri, we got Jason McNuck, and we got Art Rivas all fighting in Hawaii in the X1 September 26th. So for people to watch out for those guys and whatnot, I want to always thank everybody, you guys in the show and everybody else, the sponsors and helps my career. I want to thank guys like Jason House, who we run into each other all the time and give each other high fives when we're both in SoCal. And guys like you for you know, putting a good light on the sport. Like, that's really – it's really cool that we can have good discussions and then end on a note fucking giving props to the veterans and charity and not end on you know, fast food likes and dislikes. So just a shout-out to everybody that supports the good side of MMA.
Hey, Jason, why don't you jump at it since you're next?
Well, I'm just going to say Team High Crush for motherfucking life.
Damn straight. Team High Crotch for life. Hey.
Yes.
I just give a couple of shout-outs real quick. You know, one, you know, to the athletes that gave me the opportunity that believed in me, gave me the opportunity to be a part of this journey that they're on. You know, without them, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I do and get the joy and fulfillment in my life that I get, you know, because it's nothing better for me. And seeing these guys smile after a win. Like, when I was with Jose Figueroa a few weeks ago in Ohio, when he TKO'd Dom Steele, there's no better feeling than watching the guy, you know, put it together and come back after a two-year layoff and go on a little run like he's going on now and working his way back up the food chain, you know, because the talent's there. You know, unfortunately, you know, some setbacks occurred, and, you know, we're overcoming them slowly but surely. You know, shout-out to Alchemy Water. You know, keeping my athletes hydrated, you know, and alkaline water. I can't say nothing bad about them. You know, I enjoy the water myself personally, especially in my morning. You know, it's probably too much TMI, but, man, it makes my morning glory fucking that much better when I drink that stuff, man.
Okay.
PCSR.
Next up. Hey, beatdown.
Yeah, you cut yourself off when you start talking about your morning glories.
Yeah, beatdown, you're up,
buddy. Should I talk about my morning wood?
PCSR, you know, computer sound and repair up there in Washington. You know, these guys, he's always been great to us, supported our athletes, supported MMA United. AJ Hiller at MMA Signature has always been great to us. You know, I can't say nothing bad of him. We always appreciate the support. Dusty Mason over at DNA Anabolics, who supported, had a great conversation with him tonight, with things with Lee Morrison, things he's doing supporting him, you know, and, you know, ultimately, you know, Skippy, Lepaki, and the Madhouse crew, you know, I'd always appreciate you guys welcoming me on with open arms, you know.
Hey, we love
yeah.
you. Now, hold on. I want to make sure everyone gets that beat down, man. You want to go throw out anything?
No, I want to thank Sean and Jason for both coming on the show, man. A great show tonight.
Well, thank you, man. Thanks for the opportunity. Like me, Jason, people giving – I think this is a fucking pretty cool show, man. We gave people a different view. Like, you're hearing managers of Jason who's super successful and fighters, and we're all talking about business and other things. And maybe if – and Jason will agree, if one or two fighters can take this interview and go, fuck, I want to do this so my family can have a better future, I think we're both happy with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey,
you know,
hold on just real second. I want to make sure Jeff Clinch cuts the mouth guards. He's listening. He's a great sponsor to the show. Everybody,
GetClint.com.
You guys check him out, man. Best fucking custom fucking mouth guards in the business. Also,
I got clinched.
Yep.
Here's the thing, bro. Clinch is the only mouth guard my athletes wear, bro. He's the one that makes sure they don't lose no fucking teeth and keep the pretty smile. And, Jeff, that was my bad that I forgot you in that little rant that I went on. But, brother, thank you for everything that you do.
And then I've also got Jeff the Fan who joined us tonight. Jeff, you want to give any shout-outs, brother?
Just shout-out to all you guys that are fucking doing the right thing for the sport. You know, like, I love hearing what you guys are saying about doing the charity events or doing that thing at the park, you know. Appreciate having people in the sport that are making the sport better. You know, that's what it needs. You know, it's a great sport. They need to know there's great people in it.
And then Lepaki, man, you want to give me shout-outs, brother?
Tonight, I'm going to give a shout-out to Chris Coley, man. Chill Nation, bro. I'll talk to you soon and get back on track.
And I'll give a big shout-out to myself because I'm the shit. I want to thank all you guys for definitely coming on the show. We do this show every Friday night, folks, or we try to. Man, it's always open calling. Anybody's welcome. We're going to discuss.
Hold on. 2 weeks ago, the show was canceled. Now, all of a sudden, the show's back to every week. Okay, now I know the plan.
Look, I had to make some time for the wife, and I did it right. I got another 6 months to go, buddy, so this show's hooked.
Oh, I got one more. Tomorrow's my daughter's second birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese Oceanside. If you guys, anybody wants to come by, it's Popeye themed. There'll be goodie bags for everyone. That's what I forgot that.
And I forgot one more, too. Unique Kennels, the official Bulldog at MMA.
Nice.
He's a Bulldog breeder, taking care of our athletes, been supporting them, man. And, you know, Jamie Skipper's a great guy, man. And things he's done, stepped up. I mean, he came on last minute, supporting Lauren Murphy. You know, he took care of Lee Morrison with a new addition to the family. I'm sure you guys seen those videos of him and little Otis going to the gym training. But, you know, nothing but great things for him.
I love Lee Morrison. Everybody, you know how we always end this show every week. Eagle!
Osprey. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Peace.